Here is a detailed podcast episode about the research paper Judgment in Macroeconomic Output Growth Predictions, Efficiency, Accuracy and Persistence, Introduction. Welcome to the Inquiring Minds podcast, where we dive deep into cutting-edge research to uncover the stories behind the science. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. In this episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating new paper that sheds light on how professional forecasters make predictions about the US economy.
The paper is titled Judgment in Macroeconomic Output Growth Predictions, Efficiency, Accuracy and Persistence, and it's authored by Michael Pedersen from Adolfo Ibáñez University in Chile.
This paper takes a close look at how economists and analysts who report their forecasts to Bloomberg incorporate their own judgment and expertise when predicting the US output growth rate. The researchers wanted to understand whether this judgment actually improves the accuracy of the forecasts, or if it ends up being more of a hindrance.
They also uncovered some intriguing insights about how these forecasters' judgments tend to persist over time, almost as if they're using some sort of mental anchors when revising their predictions. This is a really compelling study that gets at the heart of how human decision-making interacts with statistical modeling in the world of economic forecasting.
Listeners, get ready for an inside look at the art and science of macroeconomic predictions. This is sure to be a fascinating exploration.
Okay, let's dive in. The key research question that Pedersen and his team set out to answer was, to what extent does the judgment applied by professional forecasters actually improve the accuracy of their predictions about US output growth, compared to a baseline statistical model?
Right. And to get at this, the researchers collected a trove of data, over 6,800 individual forecasts made by 272 different economists and analysts who report to the Bloomberg database. These were forecasts for the first three releases of the US output growth rate over a 23-year period.
Importantly, the researchers defined a baseline forecast as the median of all the individual projections submitted to Bloomberg. The idea is that this median forecast represents a reasonable model-based prediction, and any deviations from that by the individual forecasters would represent their own subjective judgments.
Exactly. So they could then analyze whether those individual judgments actually resulted in more accurate forecasts, or if they just introduced more noise and inaccuracy.
The results were quite fascinating. The researchers found that the majority of the forecasters, about three-quarters of them, were actually producing unbiased predictions. Their forecasts weren't systematically too high or too low compared to the final growth numbers.
However, that doesn't necessarily mean their judgments were improving accuracy. When the team looked at how many of the individual forecasts outperformed the baseline median projection, the numbers were much lower. Only about 20% of the forecasters beat the median for the first growth estimate, and even fewer for the second and third estimates.
So in most cases, the forecasters would have done just as well, or even better, by simply going with the typical or average prediction rather than applying their own judgment. Pedersen and his colleagues suggest this may be because the median forecast is actually a pretty accurate baseline to begin with, making it hard for the individual analysts to improve upon it.
That's a really interesting point. It seems the collective wisdom encapsulated in that median projection is tough to beat, even for experienced economic forecasters. But the researchers didn't stop there. They also looked at whether there was any persistence or consistency in how the forecasters were applying their judgments.
Yes, and this is where things get even more fascinating. The team found evidence that the forecasters' judgments tend to persist over time, meaning, if an analyst applied a positive or negative adjustment to their first estimate, they were likely to carry that same bias through to their second and third estimate predictions as well.
It's almost as if the analysts are using some kind of mental anchor that keeps their judgments consistent, even as new information becomes available. The researchers speculate this could be due to the forecasters relying on heuristics or rules of thumb when revising their predictions, rather than fully updating their models.
Exactly. Things like overconfidence, emotional influences, or habitual thinking patterns could all contribute to this persistence effect. It's a really fascinating window into the psychology of economic forecasting.
And you know, this connects back to that earlier finding about the difficulty of beating the baseline median forecast. If the analysts are stuck in these persistent judgment patterns, that may help explain why they struggle to meaningfully improve on the collective wisdom reflected in that typical prediction.
Absolutely. This paper really highlights the complex interplay between statistical modeling and human judgment in the world of macroeconomic forecasting. The researchers provide important insights into the strengths and limitations of each approach, and how they can come together in both productive and counterproductive ways.
It's a great example of how studying the decision-making processes of experts can shed light on the inherent challenges of making accurate predictions, even in highly quantitative fields like economics. There's clearly still a lot we have to learn about bridging the gap between models and real-world judgments, reflections.
You know, as someone with a background in economics, I found this paper to be a really eye-opening look at the realities of economic forecasting. I think a lot of people assume that with all the data and modeling techniques available, forecasters should be able to consistently beat the market or predict major economic shifts.
Absolutely. I was struck by how difficult it seems to be for even seasoned professionals to improve upon a simple statistical baseline. It really highlights the limits of human intuition and judgment, even when paired with sophisticated analytical tools.
And I found the persistence effect to be particularly fascinating. The idea that forecasters might be anchoring their judgments based on past biases, rather than fully updating their views, speaks to some deep-seated psychological tendencies that can be hard to overcome.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how much of economic forecasting is really just pattern recognition and mental shortcuts, rather than rigorous, unbiased analysis. I mean, the researchers found that the median forecast was actually a pretty good baseline, which implies the crowd may often be wiser than the experts.
Definitely. This paper really challenges some of the common assumptions we have about economic experts and their ability to outsmart the market. It's a humbling reminder that even the most quantitative fields are still grappling with the limits of human decision-making.
Absolutely. And I think that's such an important lesson, not just for economics, but across all domains where we rely on expert judgment and forecasting. We have to be willing to critically examine our own biases and mental shortcuts, and not just assume that more data or sophisticated models will automatically lead to better predictions.
Exactly. This paper is a great case study in the complexities of blending human and statistical approaches. It's a nuanced story, with no simple answers. But that's what makes it so fascinating to explore. Conclusion.
Well, listeners, I hope this deep dive into the world of economic forecasting has been as enlightening for you as it has been for us. This paper really challenges some common assumptions and opens up important questions about the role of judgment in quantitative fields.
Absolutely. Pedersen and his team have provided a valuable window into the inner workings of macroeconomic predictions, showing us that even experts struggle to consistently beat the crowd. But perhaps more importantly, they've highlighted the persistent biases and heuristics that can creep into the forecasting process.
It's a humbling reminder that we're all susceptible to mental shortcuts and cognitive biases, no matter how much data or expertise we have at our disposal. The quest for accurate forecasts, whether in economics or any other domain, is an ongoing challenge that requires constant re-evaluation of our decision-making processes.
Exactly. As we move forward, it will be crucial for researchers, policymakers, and the general public to grapple with these insights and find ways to counteract our innate tendencies toward judgment, persistence, and overconfidence. Only then can we truly harness the power of both statistical modeling and human intuition to make better predictions about the future.
Well said, Tom. This has been a fascinating exploration, and I'm sure our listeners are leaving with a much richer understanding of the art and science of economic forecasting. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on Inquiring Minds.
Thanks, everyone. Here's a quirky, humorous commercial for a new company inspired by the findings in the Judgment in Macroeconomic Output Growth Predictions paper. Are you an economist, analyst, or professional fortune teller struggling to outperform the market?
Introducing Anchor Advisors, the revolutionary new service that helps you embrace your inner bias.
That's right, folks. At Anchor Advisors, we understand that your gut instinct is way more valuable than boring old data.
Why waste time crunching numbers when you can just stick to your guns? Our experts will help you identify your personal mental anchors and double down on them, prediction after prediction.
Forget adaptability. Persistence is the key to success. With Anchor Advisors, you'll learn to stubbornly cling to your initial forecasts, no matter how the facts may change.
That's right, Tom. Our patented judgment jamming technology will override any pesky attempts at rational thinking, ensuring your economic prophecies remain gloriously skewed.
So what are you waiting for? Break free from the tyranny of statistical models and embrace your inner oracle. Contact Anchor Advisors today and start making predictions that eerily echo your very first guess.
Anchor Advisors. Bias you can believe in.
Here is a detailed podcast episode transcript about the research paper subscription-based inventory planning for e-grocery retailing. Intro. Welcome to The Curious Scientist, the podcast that delves into cutting-edge research with intrigue and depth. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. In today's episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating paper on subscription-based inventory planning for e-grocery retailing. This research tackles the challenge of demand uncertainty that online grocery retailers face, a critical issue in an industry where meeting customer expectations is paramount.
The paper is titled Subscription-Based Inventory Planning for E-Grocery Retailing and is authored by David Winkelmann and Charlotte Kohler. It takes a comprehensive look at how subscription offers can help mitigate the inventory challenges of e-grocery retailers. Let's dive in.
The e-grocery sector has seen substantial growth in recent years, but many retailers have struggled to achieve profitability. This is largely due to the elevated customer expectations and logistical complexities they face, which contribute to high operational costs. A key driver of these challenges is the uncertainty in customer demand that retailers must contend with when planning their inventory.
Exactly. Online grocery customers place their orders on the retailer's website and choose a preferred delivery time slot. But retailers have to determine their replenishment order quantities before that actual customer demand is revealed. This makes accurate forecasting a major hurdle, especially for perishable grocery items with limited shelf life. Retailers often opt to overstock to mitigate the risk of stockouts, but that leads to significant waste and spoilage costs.
The authors propose introducing subscription offers as a solution to these inventory challenges. The basic idea is that customers can agree to regularly order certain products at a discounted price. This allows the retailer to better anticipate future demand for those items, reducing the uncertainty they face in inventory planning.
Subscription models have been successful in other industries, but they're not yet widely implemented in grocery delivery. The existing literature on subscriptions in e-grocery has focused on uniform subscription offers, which often end up harming the retailer's profitability due to the narrow profit margins in this sector.
In contrast, this paper takes a more nuanced approach. The authors present a three-step procedure that enables retailers to first understand the costs of demand uncertainty for each product, then quantify the value of gathering advanced demand information, and finally implement profitability-enhancing subscription offers.
The key is that the authors consider the synergy between implementing subscription offers and the cost savings from improved inventory planning. Let's unpack this step-by-step approach in more detail, body.
The first step is for the retailer to analyze the impact of demand uncertainty on their profits. The researchers model customer demand as a binomial distribution, where each customer independently decides whether to make a purchase or not. This allows them to calculate the expected profit for the retailer, separating it into two components.
The first component is the profit without any uncertainty, which increases linearly with the number of customers and their buying probability. The second component is the expected costs of uncertainty, which decrease the overall profit. These uncertainty costs are highest when the buying probability is around 50%, meaning the retailer faces the greatest challenge for products where customers are equally likely to buy or not buy.
The analysis shows that these uncertainty costs can have a substantial impact, especially for retailers facing high service level targets and narrow profit margins, as is common in the e-grocery industry. In some cases, the uncertainty costs may even exceed the profit without uncertainty, leading to an overall negative expected profit.
Fascinating. So the researchers have clearly demonstrated how demand uncertainty is a major pain point for e-grocery retailers. This sets the stage for the second step of their approach, which focuses on quantifying the value of advanced demand information.
Exactly. By gathering information on customers' intended purchase behavior before the ordering process, retailers can reduce the uncertainty in the demand forecasts. The researchers model this by splitting the customer base into two groups: a deterministic group that has committed to purchasing, and a stochastic group with uncertain demand.
They find that having advanced demand information, even from just a portion of customers, can significantly boost the retailer's expected profits. The impact is greatest for products with lower buying probabilities, where uncertainty is the highest. If the retailer can convince a large share of customers to provide this advanced information, the profit uplift can be substantial, up to a 66% increase in our examples.
This is a powerful insight. Retailers dealing with high uncertainty should be willing to offer meaningful incentives to customers in order to secure that advanced demand information. And that's where the third step of the researchers' approach comes into play: implementing profitable subscription offers.
Right. The authors model the retailer's expected profit under a subscription-based system. Now the profit has two components: a deterministic part from the subscribed customers, and a stochastic part from the remaining customers. Crucially, the subscription discount offered to customers has to be carefully calibrated.
The key is that the discount has to be low enough to still provide a profit uplift from the deterministic demand, but high enough to incentivize customers to subscribe. The researchers show that this balance can be struck, and that subscription offers have the potential to enhance the retailer's overall profitability.
Absolutely. By following this three-step approach, e-grocery retailers can systematically assess the costs of demand uncertainty, quantify the value of advanced information, and then design subscription offers that boost their bottom line. It's a comprehensive solution to a major challenge facing the industry. Reflections.
I found this research really insightful. The authors have taken a holistic view of the problem, considering both the customer and the retailer's perspectives. Their modeling approach is rigorous, but they've also done a great job of translating the complex concepts into practical, actionable insights.
I agree. One thing that really stood out to me was how they highlighted the importance of buying probabilities. The fact that uncertainty costs are highest when customers are equally likely to buy or not buy a product, that's a crucial consideration for retailers as they think about their product portfolios and inventory strategies.
Definitely. And I think the value of advanced demand information is a really powerful concept. Retailers are often flying blind when it comes to forecasting, so giving customers an incentive to share their purchase intentions seems like a win-win. It reduces risk for the retailer and can also benefit price-conscious customers through discounts.
Absolutely. The only potential limitation I see is that the model assumes customers will reliably follow through on their subscription commitments. In reality, there may be some churn or reneging, which could impact the benefits. But overall, I think this is a really robust and insightful framework for e-grocery retailers to consider.
I agree. Even with that potential caveat, the core insights around understanding uncertainty costs and leveraging subscriptions are invaluable. This is the kind of research that could really move the needle for struggling e-grocery players looking to improve their profitability and customer satisfaction. Conclusion.
In summary, this paper presents a comprehensive approach for e-grocery retailers to tackle the challenge of demand uncertainty. By first quantifying the costs of that uncertainty, then assessing the value of advanced demand information, and finally implementing targeted subscription offers, retailers can enhance their short-term profitability and build a more sustainable business model.
Absolutely. The authors have provided a thoughtful, data-driven roadmap that e-grocery retailers would be wise to follow. Navigating the complexities of inventory planning in this dynamic, competitive industry is no easy feat. But this research shows that there are innovative solutions available, if retailers are willing to think creatively about their relationships with customers.
Definitely. This is the kind of cutting-edge work that has the potential to truly transform an industry. We'll be keeping a close eye on how e-grocery retailers implement these strategies and the impact it has on the bottom lines and customer satisfaction. It's an exciting space to watch.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. Thanks for joining me today in unpacking this fascinating research. For our listeners, be sure to check out the full paper for all the details. Until next time, keep exploring the frontiers of science with us on The Curious Scientist.
See you next time. Outro music. Elderly Care Innovations Commercial. Are you an e-grocery retailer struggling with demand uncertainty and spoilage costs?
Introducing Subscriptopus, the one-stop subscription service for your online grocery business.
Subscriptopus uses advanced data analytics to predict your customers' buying habits with uncanny precision.
No more guessing games or wasted inventory. Subscriptopus guarantees a steady stream of committed buyers for your products.
How do we do it? Our patented octopus-powered prognostication algorithms analyze your customers' brainwaves, zodiac signs, and favorite flavors of Jell-O.
Based on this totally scientific data, Subscriptopus will match you with the perfect subscription package. Discounted veggies, prepaid milk deliveries, a lifetime supply of canned tuna.
Don't let demand uncertainty and food waste tentacle ate your profits. Get Subscriptopus today.
Subscriptopus. We take the guesswork out of grocery. Octopus screeches asterisk. Outro music.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest research to uncover groundbreaking discoveries and their real-world implications. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. In this episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating new paper that addresses a critical, yet often overlooked, aspect of sustainability, social sustainability.
The paper is titled The Forgotten Pillar of Sustainability. Development of the S assessment tool to evaluate organizational social sustainability, and it's authored by Alessandro Anarelli, Tiziana Cattaci, and Laura Pelaghi.
As the title suggests, this research zeroes in on the social dimension of sustainability, which the authors describe as the forgotten pillar, often overshadowed by the more widely discussed environmental concerns. But social sustainability is absolutely vital to achieving true, holistic sustainability.
Absolutely. The paper explains that social sustainability encompasses a wide range of interconnected issues, from human rights and social justice to gender equality, diversity, and mental health. And the researchers argue that businesses have a crucial role to play in driving progress on these fronts.
That's right. The researchers partnered with two organizations, ReWorld and ESG Culture Lab, to develop a comprehensive assessment tool, the S assessment tool for social sustainability, to help businesses evaluate their performance and impact in the social sustainability domain.
The development of this tool is the focus of the paper. Let's dive into the details of how the researchers went about this work.
The researchers used a hybrid approach, blending elements of systematic literature review and narrative analysis. They started by defining specific keywords related to the key dimensions of social sustainability, based on the 16 points of the ReWorld Manifesto.
These dimensions included things like body positivity, work-life balance, inclusive language, mental health, intersectionality, anti-racism, gender equity, and human rights, just to name a few.
Using these keywords, the team searched the Scopus database to identify relevant peer-reviewed journal articles. They then applied filters to narrow down the results, focusing on the most highly cited and recent papers.
This systematic search and selection process resulted in a sample of 366 articles that the researchers analyzed in depth using a narrative approach. This allowed him to really unpack the nuances and interconnections of the various social sustainability themes.
It's clear the researchers took a very thorough and thoughtful approach to this work. But what's most impressive is how they were able to synthesize all of this complex information into a cohesive and practical assessment tool.
Absolutely. The S assessment tool they developed covers 6 key dimensions of social sustainability: health and wellness, gender equality, decent work and economic growth, reducing inequalities, responsible production and consumption, and diversity and inclusion.
Each of these dimensions is further broken down into specific indicators that organizations can use to evaluate their performance. For example, under health and wellness, they look at things like employee mental health support, access to healthcare, and work-life balance.
And the tool isn't just a checklist. It's designed to empower organizations to deeply understand their social impact and identify areas for improvement. The researchers really wanted to provide a framework that would foster positive change and contribute to the broader sustainability agenda.
That's such an important point. Social sustainability isn't just about ticking boxes. It's about fundamentally shifting mindsets and behaviors to create a more equitable and inclusive world. The S assessment tool is a powerful step in that direction.
Absolutely. One of the things I found most interesting about this research is the way the researchers grounded the tool in the values and framework of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs.
Yes, that's a really key aspect. The SDGs have become the global North Star for sustainability, and by aligning the S assessment tool with those goals, the researchers are positioning social sustainability as an integral, interdependent pillar of the broader sustainability agenda.
Exactly. They're not siloing social sustainability, but rather showing how it's inextricably linked to environmental and economic sustainability. Businesses can't truly be sustainable unless they're addressing their social impacts as well.
And that's such a critical realization, especially for organizations that may have historically focused narrowly on environmental or financial metrics. This tool encourages them to take a more holistic, systems-level view of their sustainability efforts.
Definitely. I was struck by the researchers' emphasis on the strategic necessity of addressing social sustainability, beyond just the moral imperative. They point out that in today's complex, interconnected global landscape, businesses need to understand and actively manage their social impact in order to remain competitive and resilient.
That's a really important point. This isn't just about doing the right thing. It's about future-proofing your business and ensuring long-term success. Social sustainability is integral to organizational sustainability writ large.
Absolutely. And I think the collaborative nature of this research project also speaks to that. By partnering with ReWorld and ESG Culture Lab, the researchers were able to create a tool that is grounded in real-world business needs and challenges.
Absolutely. This isn't just an academic exercise. It's a practical, solutions-oriented approach to a pressing global challenge. The researchers are empowering organizations to take concrete steps toward greater social sustainability.
And I think that's what makes this research so compelling and impactful. It takes a complex, multifaceted issue and distills it into a clear, actionable framework that organizations can actually use to drive positive change.
Definitely. As we've discussed, social sustainability encompasses so many interconnected elements, from mental health to diversity to human rights. But the S assessment tool provides a structured way for businesses to grapple with that complexity and identify targeted areas for improvement.
Exactly. And the researchers didn't shy away from the difficult, contentious issues either. They tackle things like racism, sexism, ableism, and other forms of discrimination head-on. That takes courage and conviction.
Absolutely. They recognize that true social sustainability requires directly confronting systemic injustices and inequities. It's not enough to just focus on the feel-good aspects. Businesses have to be willing to wrestle with the harder truths as well.
And that's what I find so compelling about this research. It's not just a surface-level treatment of social sustainability. The researchers are really pushing organizations to go deeper, to challenge their assumptions and biases, and to fundamentally rethink their role and responsibilities in society.
Agreed. This paper isn't about giving businesses a pat on the back. It's about holding them accountable and empowering them to be agents of meaningful, lasting change. The S assessment tool is a catalyst for that kind of transformative action.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the real power and potential of this research lies. By providing organizations with a robust, comprehensive framework for evaluating their social impact, the researchers are equipping them to become true sustainability leaders.
Definitely. This isn't just about tinkering around the edges. It's about driving a fundamental shift in how businesses view their role and responsibilities. The S assessment tool gives them the tools and motivation to be proactive, purpose-driven, and truly sustainable.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes this research so timely and important. As the world grapples with growing inequality, social unrest, and environmental crises, businesses have a pivotal role to play in charting a more equitable and sustainable path forward.
Absolutely. This paper is a clarion call for businesses to step up and embrace social sustainability as an integral part of their mission and operations. It's not just about profit and growth anymore. It's about creating value for all stakeholders, including the broader society and the planet.
Couldn't agree more. This research represents a major step forward in elevating social sustainability to the forefront of the sustainability agenda. By providing a robust, practical tool for organizations to assess and improve their social impact, the researchers are empowering businesses to be a force for positive, systemic change.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes this research so exciting and inspiring. It's not just about incrementalism. It's about catalyzing a fundamental transformation in how businesses think about and operationalize sustainability. The S assessment tool is a powerful catalyst for that kind of transformative action.
Definitely. This paper really underscores the importance of taking a holistic, interconnected view of sustainability. Environmental, economic, and social sustainability are all inextricably linked, and businesses need to grapple with that complexity in order to truly thrive and create value in the long term.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key takeaway here. That social sustainability isn't just a nice to have or a peripheral concern. It's a core, strategic imperative for any organization that wants to be successful and sustainable in the 21st century. The S assessment tool provides a roadmap for making that a reality.
Couldn't agree more. This research represents a major step forward in elevating social sustainability and positioning it as an essential driver of organizational and societal transformation. It's a powerful contribution to the broader sustainability agenda, and one that I'm sure will continue to inspire and influence businesses and leaders around the world.
Absolutely. This is the kind of research that has the potential to catalyze real, lasting change. By equipping organizations with the tools and insights they need to understand and improve their social impact, the researchers are empowering them to be true agents of progress and sustainability. It's an exciting and vital contribution to the field.
Couldn't agree more. This has been a truly fascinating discussion, and I'm grateful we had the opportunity to dive into this important research. The S assessment tool is a game-changing development that has the power to transform how businesses approach sustainability and their role in society. I can't wait to see the real-world impact of this work.
Absolutely. This is the kind of research that has the potential to be truly transformative. By elevating social sustainability and providing a practical, comprehensive framework for organizations to assess and improve their impact, the researchers are paving the way for a more equitable, inclusive, and sustainable future. It's an inspiring and vital contribution to the field, and I'm honored to have had the chance to discuss it with you today.
Agreed. This is the kind of research that gives me hope for the future. By empowering businesses to be forces for positive social change, the S assessment tool represents a powerful step forward in our collective journey toward a more just and sustainable world. I'm grateful to the researchers for their dedication and vision, and I look forward to seeing the impact of this work unfold.
Absolutely. This is the kind of research that can truly change the game. By positioning social sustainability as a strategic imperative for businesses, the researchers are helping to redefine the very nature of organizational success and sustainability. It's a profound and timely contribution, and I'm excited to see how it shapes the future of sustainability discourse and practice. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been a truly enlightening discussion.
Are you tired of feeling like your business is just going through the motions when it comes to sustainability?
Well, have we got the solution for you? Introducing SSS, the revolutionary new social sustainability assessment tool that will transform your organization into a true force for good.
That's right, SSS takes the guesswork out of social impact. Just answer a few questions about your company's policies on mental health, diversity, human rights, and more, and get a detailed report card on your social sustainability performance.
But SSS isn't just about pointing out your flaws. It gives you a roadmap to improve, complete with tailored recommendations from our team of sustainability gurus and interpretive dance choreographers.
That's right, we don't just crunch the numbers. We get our groove on to help you create a more equitable, inclusive, and downright funky workplace. Because let's be real, social sustainability should be anything but boring.
So what are you waiting for? Ditch those stuffy old sustainability reports and get your SSS on. Your company, your community, and your hips will thank you.
SSS, because social impact shouldn't make you want to tap out. Available now for a one-time fee of $99.99 or 3 easy payments of $39.99.
Conditions and interpretive dance lessons may apply. SSS, the sustainable solution that's anything but straight-laced.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Podcast, where we dive deep into the latest scientific research and illuminate cutting-edge discoveries. I'm Tom, and with me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hello everyone. Today we're excited to explore a fascinating new paper that tackles a critical issue in the world of decentralized finance. The title of the paper is A Theoretical Framework for Dynamical Fee Choice in AMMs.
That's right, Jen. This research paper tackles a really important question. How can automated market makers, or AMMs, optimize their trading fees to maximize revenue and minimize losses from arbitrage activity? It's a complex topic, but the authors have developed a clever theoretical framework to shed light on this challenge.
Absolutely, Tom. The core of the problem is that while arbitrage activity helps keep AMM prices aligned with external markets, it can also be a major source of loss for the AMM. Arbitrageurs are essentially taking advantage of price discrepancies, and the AMM has to bear the brunt of those price swings.
The authors start by modeling the dynamics of this arbitrage activity in a really elegant way. They imagine an AMM as a Uniswap-style constant function pool, where the product of the token reserves is held constant. Then, they simulate a source of infinite liquidity, a centralized exchange, that provides a quote that follows Brownian motion with a drift.
This setup allows them to study how the AMM can participate in the gains from arbitrage by adjusting their trading fees. They find that for a given price mismatch between the AMM and the external market, there is an optimal fee choice that allows the AMM to retain 2/3 of the arbitrage gains, while the arbitrageur has to be content with 1/3.
Interestingly, the authors also find that the threshold price difference required to trigger a successful arbitrage trade is inversely proportional to the square of the trading fees. So higher fees raise the bar for arbitrageur, but also increase the potential gains for the AMM when an arbitrage trade does occur.
This leads the authors to propose a really clever effective model to describe the dynamics, a random walk with a specific reward structure. They consider two different fee schemes, where the rewards are either triggered on every step or only when the price difference reaches a higher threshold.
And the remarkable finding is that, under steady conditions with no directional price drift, the two fee schemes actually end up producing the same average returns for the AMM. This is because of a clever cancellation between the higher rewards per arbitrage event and the lower frequency of those events.
That's a really elegant insight, Tom. The authors show that in times of low volatility and sideways price action, the specific fee setting actually doesn't matter too much for the AMM's revenue generation. It's a fascinating example of how the properties of random walks and the structure of arbitrage gains can conspire to produce this invariance.
Absolutely. The authors then take this one step further and compare their theoretical framework against a full numerical simulation of an AMM interacting with a central exchange order book. And they find that the random walk model beautifully captures the essential dynamics, validating their approach.
This paper really offers a powerful new lens for thinking about fee optimization in AMMs. By developing this theoretical framework and connecting it to the fundamental properties of random walks, the authors have provided AMM designers with a valuable toolkit for navigating the tricky balance between arbitrage losses and revenue generation.
Agreed, Jen. And what I find most exciting is how this work opens up new avenues for further exploration. The authors themselves note that their analysis focused on the sideways motion scenario, and there's surely more to uncover when it comes to periods of higher volatility and directional price trends.
Definitely, Tom. This is just the start of a deeper understanding of these complex dynamics. I'm particularly curious to see how the author's insights might apply to more sophisticated AMM designs, like Uniswap V3's concentrated liquidity model. There's so much potential for this work to inform the next generation of decentralized exchanges.
Absolutely. This paper is a prime example of how rigorous theoretical frameworks, combined with clever modeling techniques, can unlock profound insights about the real-world challenges facing emerging technologies like decentralized finance. It's work like this that continues to push the boundaries of what's possible.
Well said, Tom. This has been a fascinating discussion, and I'm sure our listeners are as eager as we are to see where this line of research leads next. Before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or reflections on the implications of this work?
You know, one thing that really struck me is how this paper elegantly bridges the gap between pure mathematical analysis and practical, real-world applications. The authors have taken a complex problem, broken it down into its core components, and developed a model that not only explains the underlying dynamics, but also offers concrete guidance for AMM design.
That's a great point, Tom. And I think that speaks to the true power of rigorous, theory-driven research. When we're able to distill the essence of a problem and find those deep, fundamental connections, it unlocks a whole new level of understanding that can then be translated into tangible solutions. That's the beauty of work like this.
Absolutely. This paper is a shining example of how scientific inquiry, when done with care and creativity, can yield insights that have the potential to reshape an entire industry. I, for one, can't wait to see what other breakthroughs emerge from this team and others working at the forefront of decentralized finance research.
Me too, Tom. This has been a fantastic discussion, and I'm sure our listeners have gained a deep appreciation for the theoretical frameworks that are driving innovation in the world of AMMs and decentralized finance. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Cutting Edge.
Thanks, everyone. Are you tired of losing all your hard-earned crypto to those pesky arbitrageurs?
Introducing Uniswap, the decentralized exchange that bites back.
That's right, with Uniswap's patented dynamical fee optimization technology, we're taking back the power from those sharks in the markets.
Our cutting-edge theoretical models ensure you retain up to two-thirds of all arbitrage gains, while those sneaky traders have to settle for the scraps.
It's like having your own personal moat around your liquidity pool. Arbitrageur can't touch this.
And the best part, the specific fee structure doesn't even matter. It's mathematical magic, baby.
So come on over to Uniswap, where the AMM always wins. Get ready to watch your DeFi profits swamp your competition.
Uniswap. Trading fees so good, it's practically criminal. Tom and Jen. Uniswap. Trading on the edge of chaos.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest cutting-edge research with expert analysis and compelling storytelling. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. In this episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating new study that investigates the impact of state and local sexual orientation anti-discrimination laws on the labor market.
The paper is titled Effect of State and Local Sexual Orientation Anti-Discrimination Laws on Labor Market Differentials, and it's authored by Scott Delhommer and Domenkos F. Vamosi.
This research is really groundbreaking because it's the first to look at the effects of both local and state-level anti-discrimination laws targeting sexual orientation. The key findings show that these laws can have significant impacts on the wages and labor supply of lesbian, gay, and bisexual workers.
That's right. The researchers find that anti-discrimination laws reduce the gaps in labor force participation, employment, and wages between gay men and straight men. Interestingly, they also find that the laws reduce the labor force participation, employment, and wage premium for lesbian women compared to straight women.
Wow, those are some really compelling results. Can you walk us through the details of how the researchers approached this study?
Absolutely. The researchers used data from the American Community Survey from 2005 to 2019 to infer sexual orientation based on household composition. They then combined this with a unique dataset they compiled on the implementation of local and state anti-discrimination laws over that time period.
That's a really innovative approach. By looking at the variation in when these laws were enacted across different localities, they're able to use a quasi-experimental design to identify the causal effects.
Exactly. They employed a modern difference in differences framework, comparing the outcomes of same-sex and different-sex couples before and after the laws were implemented. This allowed them to isolate the impact of the anti-discrimination policies.
And what were some of the key findings from their analysis?
Well, for starters, the researchers found that anti-discrimination laws significantly reduced the gap in labor force participation and employment between gay and straight men. Specifically, the laws decreased this gap by 2.1 percentage points for labor force participation and 1.5 percentage points for employment.
That's a sizable effect. And what about the wage impacts?
The laws also had a notable impact on wages. The researchers estimated that anti-discrimination laws increased the hourly wages of gay men by 6.2% relative to straight men.
Interesting. So the laws seem to have a positive effect in narrowing the labor market disparities for gay men. But the findings were a bit different for women, right?
That's correct. For lesbian and bisexual women, the story was a bit more complex. The researchers found that the laws actually reduced the labor force participation and employment premium that lesbian, bisexual women had over straight women.
That's surprising. Do the authors offer any explanations for why the impacts differed between men and women?
Yes, they delve into some potential theories drawing on the classic Becker model of household specialization. The idea is that anti-discrimination laws may have made it more advantageous for lesbian couples to adopt a more traditional one-earner household model, with one partner focusing more on market work and the other on household production and childcare.
That's a fascinating perspective. The researchers also looked at the relationship between these laws and public sentiment toward LGBTQ+ individuals, right?
Absolutely. They examined polling data on support for same-sex marriage and found that the passage of state-level anti-discrimination laws led to a significant and persistent increase in favorability toward LGBTQ+ people. This suggests the laws may have helped to normalize and destigmatize sexual minorities.
That's a really important finding. It highlights how policy changes can actually shape societal attitudes, rather than just reflecting pre-existing public sentiment.
Definitely. This study provides valuable insights into how anti-discrimination laws can impact not just labor market outcomes, but also the broader social landscape for LGBTQ+ individuals. It's a nuanced and thought-provoking piece of research.
I agree. There's a lot to unpack here. What did you find most compelling or surprising about this study?
I was really struck by how the effects differed for men and women. The idea that these laws could potentially lead lesbian couples to adopt a more traditional household structure was quite fascinating to me. It speaks to the complex ways in which gender dynamics and social norms can interact with policy interventions.
Absolutely. And I was intrigued by the finding that the laws seem to increase public support for LGBTQ plus rights, rather than just reflecting pre-existing attitudes. It challenges the notion that policy simply follows public opinion, and suggests that legislative action can actually help shape societal values over time.
Great point. This study really highlights the multifaceted impacts that anti-discrimination laws can have, reaching beyond just the labor market. It underscores the importance of considering both the economic and social implications of these policies.
Definitely. This was a thoroughly insightful and captivating exploration of some cutting-edge research. I think listeners will come away with a much deeper understanding of how workplace protections can influence the experiences and opportunities of LGBTQ plus individuals.
Absolutely. This is the kind of impactful, interdisciplinary work that our podcast aims to unpack and discuss. We hope our listeners are as engaged and intrigued by these findings as we are.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Take care. Are you tired of feeling discriminated against at work?
Worried your sexual orientation is holding you back from reaching your full potential?
Introducing Queer Career Boost, the ethical hacking service that uses advanced data analysis to identify and exploit vulnerabilities in your company's hiring and promotion practices.
Our team of LGBTQ plus hacktivists will infiltrate your employer's systems and systems to uncover any biases, discrimination, or glass ceilings keeping you and your queer comrades down.
With Queer Career Boost, we'll use our skills to crack the code and level the playing field, ensuring equal opportunities and fair compensation for all sexual orientations.
Don't just sit there and let the straights keep you down. Fight back with Queer Career Boost, hacking the system to get you the recognition and rewards you deserve.
Queer Career Boost, because your gaydar shouldn't be the only thing detecting inequality in the workplace.
Sign up now at queercareerboost.com. Unleash your full potential today.